From KLCC Studios, this is Oregon on the Record.
I'm Michael Dunn. No two colors exemplify our divided nation like blue and red. It seems as if we live in either a red state or a blue state, red town or blue city. But there's another color that's also in play in our political divide, and that's green. Green as in money. All across Oregon and all across the nation, many consumers are voting with their pocketbook. Some are protesting Trump by boycotting businesses friendly to the administration, and some businesses are doing away with DEI programs for fear of economic retribution. But do retail protests work? Today on the show, you'll hear from an expert at the University of Oregon who says they can if done right, and you'll hear from a reporter who's been covering protests at ground zero for this movement, carmaker Tesla. Protesting businesses that one disagrees with politically isn't new, but perhaps the veracity of protest is reaching new heights, and businesses large and small are taking notice. Today on the show, a leader within the University of Oregon Business School shares her insights as to the efficacy of retail protests. Bettina Cornwell is the head of the Department of Marketing at the Lundquist College of Business at the University of Oregon. Thanks so much for coming in and talking to us.
My pleasure to be here.
Yeah, retail protests. I kind of wanted to, you know, get your read on, do they work? Can retail protests work? Can large numbers of consumers, you know, boycott an establishment to get them to change a policy or practice?
Indeed, it can happen. Mm-hmm. There are a couple of different websites that actually catalog these and keep a count of them. So there are a number of examples out there that we know happened,
okay,
that we know that there was a behavior change on the part of the retailer, or also generally to brands too.
Yeah. Do you have any examples you can give us of you know, those kind of protests that changed a retailer's policy?
Yeah, interestingly, the challenge is this.
Mm-hmm.
They happen, and then how is information recorded, and how can you know that was the change?
Sure.
So academic work offers a few case studies.
Okay.
One in 2011 or so was in Israel,
mm-hmm,
and they were protesting the price of food, mostly with grocers and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Thousands of people came out, and it changed the behavior of the grocers.
Okay.
Those retailers. And interestingly enough, this study, again, how do you get the information to know that it really was about the protest,
mm-hmm,
was able to put together all of the information and show the stock price changes for these retailers.
Ah.
And one of the retailers went the distance to help develop what it was that the protesters were on about, and they actually had an improved stock price.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. In this moment right now, we are seeing, you know, at sort of the behest of the federal government and the Trump administration, you know, we're seeing large corporations reduce or maybe even entirely remove their diversity, equity, and inclusion policies. And that's something that the Trump administration has really been railing against. And so I'm kind of, you know, I want to see if you think that, you know, that corporations are going to look at this on sort of a temporary basis. Maybe, you know, they'll move on to other things and leave it alone. Or do you kind of feel like, you know, this may be something very permanent? Or do you think that a retailer may say, well, in a year's time, maybe we can look to reestablish what I think a lot of people thought were pretty popular policies?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a really good question. And I have to say that the letters D, E, and I are so politically charged right now.
Okay.
That what you have to ask, in my opinion, is if a program that was near and dear to the philosophy, the mission, and the values of a company were so easily removed, was it indeed so deeply ingrained in that company's DNA?
I see.
So there are companies that are not out there in the public, you know, in the media, in the discussion right now, that are perhaps abiding by those values and those policies and projects that they've put in place. And the ones that that left it readily.
Hmm.
And then my question is, how committed were they to it to begin with?
Interesting. It could almost liken to another sort of term, greenwashing. You know, mm-hmm. companies that pledged a lot of environmental sustainability, mm-hmm. how were they really serious about it? Or was it, like I said, greenwashing?
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. Let me reintroduce you to the audience. We're talking to Bettina Cornwell. She is the head of the Department of Marketing at the Lundquist College of Business at the University of Oregon. So, you know, we have red states and blue states, but of course, business is a green state, if you will. They're interested in money. And I'm kind of wondering, you know, from your perspective, what's the calculus that retailers are going to make right now in terms of sort of which group might they alienate? Because obviously, you know, it could be that, oh gosh, we don't want to, you know, raise the ire of the MAGA Republicans. And so we're going to do away with DEI. But then, of course, you could look around and say a lot of progressive people might boycott you because you did that action. What's the calculus look like?
A company needs to know, and probably does know, its target audience mm-hmm. quite well. And if you look back at what Nike did with some of the things in their advertising, and they definitely got on the wrong side of a lot of individuals who burned shoes and so on and so on.
Hmm.
The stock price tumbled, but then it recovered
yeah.
because the individuals that were buying that brand and happy to go to those retailers, they stuck with their brand. They
yeah.
stuck with their retailers.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking of, you know, there are massive companies that I mean, I'll just say it. Amazon is a place that there's so many people shop, and obviously, you know, Amazon right now tied to its owner and some of the things that are happening with his ownership of the Washington Post, mm-hmm. people may want to, you know, hurt Jeff Bezos or something like that, but to boycott something as prominent and just almost ubiquitous as Amazon, that's really hard, isn't it?
It is indeed, especially when it requires behavior change.
Mm-hmm.
And it also gets to some other characteristics about purchasing, such as the best possible price or the most convenient way to shop. And the other part about that kind of boycotting that you would want to examine more deeply is if one were to boycott, and not to mention the fact that they are boycotting for a reason, will their change in behavior be attributed to dislike for a policy or the vanquishing of a policy?
Yeah.
So I think that if individuals do want to make a difference and they want to connect their behavior in boycotting, even if it's quiet boycotting, not activism, then they need to also communicate that and say, I'm not buying this product because I'm not happy with your policies.
So it could be that somebody boycotts a particular retailer and then goes on social media to tell the world about it.
Right.
Interesting.
So if you're adamant to make change,
yeah.
it's not enough just to not buy. You need to not buy and be vocal.
I'm wondering, too. I mean, obviously, most people have fairly modest followings on social media, but mm-hmm. what would happen if you know, a big time celebrity says, I'm no longer, you know, doing that? Can that have impact?
Sure, but also individuals can. Just think, if everyone that you know in this city
mm-hmm.
were to suddenly not buy mm-hmm. white bread in a grocery store.
Yeah.
Within days, the grocery store would be full of white bread.
Wow.
With no one buying it, somebody would want to make a change.
Yeah.
And so a large number of people, when they change their behavior and communicate the reasons for it, can make a change.
Yeah. Let's get into numbers a little bit, just in not specific numbers, but just the power of numbers. And really, it's kind of like this. You know, what percentage of consumers, you know, who boycott a retailer, I mean, how big or how small could it have an impact?
Yeah. So a limited number of people will boycott in an activist way and show up in front of a retail location and protest with a sign.
Hmm.
That's a limited number of people.
Sure.
But the number of people that will quietly boycott is quite high. But the point is, if you quietly boycott but don't at least communicate that to the retailer so they know, I'm not buying because I don't like your policies.
Yeah.
Then that could be just attributed to economic downturn or whatever. So on social media or with the retailer themselves, the point is to, if you are boycotting, make sure people know you're boycotting.
Yeah. I'm wondering, you know, if I'm a retailer and I, you know, obviously I want to, you know, I want to attract as many customers as possible. Mm-hmm. And so I'm wondering, you know, in what you study, is there kind of a middle ground for what a retailer might want to sort of be? I.e., you know, I understand people who might be angry at something like DEI. I understand people who think it's a great thing. How do you sit on that fence so that you don't, you know, anger one group or another? Or do you basically, and especially in our politically charged world, do you have to, you know, pick a side of the fence?
I think if you orient yourself to basics that we know work, you may remember Elkington and the People, Planet, Profits.
Mm-hmm.
So triple bottom line or other variants that have come up since then, if we look at how that works, I don't have to be extremely vocal about my caring for people, caring for the environment. But if I do it, the evidence is there. Those companies perform well.
Okay.
There's a meta-analysis or a study of studies that shows that companies that orient to the people, orient to the environment, the planet, they get what they hope to. Profits.
Okay. My last question for you is this. I mean, you know, it's sort of as you're looking at this, and maybe, you know, do you think, I don't know, sometime in the next 6 months or a year that more retailers will sort of follow suit with what's happening in the DEI space? Do you think that there'll be this kind of happy medium of, well, maybe we can kind of, you know, find, like we just talked about in the last question, a middle ground? How do you see this sort of shaking out in this incredibly volatile period we're in right now?
Yeah. Companies, brands, retailers probably have to make decisions and choices about their own following, their own customers, and their own employees. But management tells you, study after study, while it may be difficult, a diverse workforce is a better workforce in terms of success and profitability.
Okay. Bettina Cornwell, she is the head of the Department of Marketing at the Lundquist College of Business at the U of O. Thank you so much for coming in and chatting with us.
My pleasure.
Tesla dealerships and cars have become a flashpoint of Trump administration protest, and next you'll hear from a Portland reporter who's seen them firsthand. Taylor Griggs, a reporter with the Portland Mercury, thanks so much for coming on and talking to us.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. You wrote a story a while back called Portland Protesters Rally for Tesla Takedown. Why don't you just describe for our audience, you know, what you saw when you were reporting on this protest?
Yeah, so this protest was at the beginning of March, and they've been going on weekly or twice weekly since then in Portland and elsewhere around the world. And people were, you know, protesting with signs against Elon Musk and his current role in the Trump administration, hoping to make a difference through protesting this company strongly associated with a prominent member of the new administration.
I was going to say too, and you had an opportunity to talk to some of the protesters. What were some of the things that they told you?
Well, some of the people at this particular protest that I went to were at the event more to as a symbolic way of protesting against Elon Musk. And, you know, they had issues with what he is doing with his Department of Governmental Efficiency and all the mass layoffs that have been going on and the perceived, you know, destruction to a lot of elements of the federal government. But there's definitely another group of people who are protesting at Tesla specifically to reduce the company's stock prices and hopefully make an impact in Elon Musk's financial situation.
Yeah, I mean, that's, I'm very curious about this idea of kind of retail protest. And you're right, you know, obviously very large, profitable car company associated with Elon Musk. And, you know, it's both trying to sell cars and obviously maximize its stock price. You know, was there you know, a real sense of optimism that protests like this could reach that objective and financially hurt someone like Elon Musk?
I think that given recent news about the stock prices dipping, it kind of, you know, goes up and down. But I think that people are feeling optimistic about that. There's definitely a sense that people are embarrassed to be associated with their Teslas if they have them, or some people, you know, they're putting bumper stickers on trying to identify themselves as you know, not Elon Musk supporters. I think that, yeah, there's definitely a unique opportunity here to protest a specific product that's associated with this administration. I don't think that there has really been something like this in the past. I mean, it's not like Trump steaks or whatever is so ubiquitous that people would really go out and boycott this to protest the administration. But yeah, Here we have Elon Musk with this product, and you can, you know, show your distaste for the administration by protesting it.
Yeah. You pointed out something which I think is sort of fascinating, because obviously, you know, somebody might have bought a Tesla, I don't know, 10 years ago, even 5 years ago, and thinking, okay, you know, I'm doing my part for the environment. It's an electric car. It's good for the environment. And they might have not even really thought that much about Elon Musk back then. But now, with all that's gone on, I don't know if you had an opportunity to talk with some of those people who may be either current or previous Tesla owners who are sort of experiencing that idea of buyer's remorse.
Well, there was one person I talked to at this protest who was driving into the dealership and in his Tesla, and seemingly going to the protest, though. But I wasn't sure exactly what he was doing. But he told me that he was embarrassed to be associated with this company now. I think that there are people who are trying to sell their cars because, yeah, back when they bought them, they didn't think of it like this. And Elon Musk was not in the position that he is right now. But some aren't able to. I think there's not really a huge market for them, or have different, you know, their car loans aren't allowing them to sell at this point. So I think people are in a tricky situation.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, in terms of like this protest, the ongoing protest we're seeing in Portland, how does it fit in? As you mentioned, this is a national and somewhat global movement. I mean, is there sort of coordination with local groups that you've been talking to and other groups up and down the West Coast, all across the nation?
I think that people who are protesting this and kind of people who are leading them are in somewhat coordination, maybe just over social media with each other. I think that it's definitely inspiring other people and getting people out, continuing the momentum when they see people across the country and the world really protesting against Tesla. So I don't think that there has necessarily been a lot of organized coordination, but it's just kind of the momentum has grown. There is a group, Indivisible, which has organize these protests across the country, and is part of a National Day of Action this Saturday. That's not specifically about Tesla, but about the whole administration.
Sure, sure. Let me quickly reintroduce you to the audience. We're talking with Taylor Griggs. She's a reporter with the Portland Mercury. It's interesting because obviously protest, in-person protest is you know, has been going on for hundreds of years. But of course, and you just mentioned this concept of social media kind of undergirding the power of it, is kind of what you've seen both in this particular protest, but obviously, you know, Portland is so well known for protests. How does social media kind of help amplify the impact of a protest like this, while it might be dozens or hundreds of people at a particular dealership, but obviously with the ability to utilize social media to kind of showcase these images, you know, all over the globe? How does that kind of make protest even more impactful?
For sure. I think, yeah, if people thought they were just protesting alone or, with a smaller group of people in their city, I don't think it would have as big of an impact. And it's also clear that based on, in large part, I think the social media posts that have been going around, that has really gotten to the administration in a way. I mean, Elon Musk and the Attorney General, Pam Bondi, have both spoken out against the protests. And also some kind of unrelated, vandalism events that the protest leaders really say are not affiliated with these protests. But I think that given, every time that Elon Musk will make a comment about it, it shows this is making somewhat of an impact, and those messages get amplified on social media, and then people will continue
Yeah.
doing it.
For the newspaper you work for, and obviously covering so much that happens in Portland, and Portland has become known as kind of an epicenter for protest. I kind of wanted to ask you, obviously it's easy to sort of drive by when a group of people are protesting and thinking, oh, what possible difference does that make? When you talk to protesters, and it could be a terrible day, raining, cold, how do they kind of explain that what they do is important?
Yeah, for sure. I think that there's a few different parts to it. First of all, I think there's some people who are kind of depressed about what's going on and feel like there's not a lot that they can do. So they spend a lot of time online, and feeling hopeless. And one of the people I talked to for my article kind of pointed out this is going out and protesting is an alternative to spending a lot of time alone. They've turned these protests into kind of a party, where you can, turn these feelings of despair into some kind of action and find similar-minded people to you. And then there's the another impact that you're seeing that you can potentially have an impact on this person who has a huge role in the current administration, definitely will keep people going.
Yeah, no. She is Taylor Griggs, reporter with the Portland Mercury, talking about the protests against Tesla. Really appreciate you coming on and talking with us.
Thank you so much. It was great to be on.
That's the show for today. All episodes of Oregon on the Record are available as a podcast at klcc.org. Tomorrow on the show, we check in with Our Children's Trust, the organization that launched the historic youth climate change lawsuit. The Supreme Court ruled against them recently, and we'll talk about what's next. I'm Michael Dunn, and this has been Oregon on the Record from KLCC. Thanks for listening.